thank you for this kind invitation. I'm sorry I have to address you in English. I can understand a lot of French, but I really can't support the things that I'm trying to say in this language. So I will just try to develop my thoughts using a language which is foreign to both you and me, which is a condition. From the things that we are hearing this day, it is rather obvious that the problem of the discussion on commons is indeed a contested terrain. It's not simply words used in the same way. It's not simply choices made in the same direction. It is taking sides. Okay, taking sides in the discussion on commons is essentially a first step in a way declaring your views about what it means to develop this kind of discussion. So this discussion is not simply an academic trend. It's not simply something which puts you in the map, since you participate in a discussion which is popular. It's also something which is deeply embedded in ethical, political, and historical questions. So I will just start by saying that I will develop some thoughts, some suggestions, if you might say that, that try to take sides in a certain form of discussion that directly is connected to questions of democracy, to questions of social organization. I think that this discussion is important today, not because we think of it as important, but because indeed people throughout the world have posed those problems, have acted in the direction of solving them, and this is happening in conditions of urgency. Let me check. Okay, you have to tolerate two languages. The French translation is a kind offer of Leila Kabir, and I thank her a lot for that. So, indeed, it is important to consider the emergence of the discussion on commoning by understanding that this happens in a specific situation, in a specific contingency. And it is a specific contingency that has to do with specific forms through which we understand what is important for the survival of certain societies. It is a discussion that has arisen because people tend to rethink about what it is important and how they somehow represent it between themselves. So commons and the idea of commons does not refer to specific entities, things out there, but it has to do with conditions defined as important, as necessary, as indispensable for a certain society to survive. Even water, we tend to think of water or air as necessarily as a common good. No, water becomes a common good if a certain society thinks of it as a common good, tries to protect it in a certain way, develops rules through which it will try to protect it, and establishes forms of cooperation that indeed make this happen. So, it is a process rather than a thing that we should focus on. That is why I choose the peculiar word, which is untranslatable in most of the languages, the verb commoning, which is, by the way, is also a main word in English, didn't exist before. Commoning as a process, which indeed describes the fact that societies, in a way, define what is to be shared, how, and why is it necessary. And here I try also to add to this problematization of the commons another aspect that comes from a rethinking of the commoning processes in the context of Latin American societies. There is a very interesting Mexican philosopher called Gustavo Esteva, who is actually using the word comunalidad, which is also not easily translatable. The nearest translation is commonality, which, as he says, is not simply the fact of sharing, but it's a connection that has to do with the, a connection of practices, of definition of what it is what it is important to share, and a way of understanding those who participate in this definition. So this ends up being, in a beautiful phrase, the creation of a new mental space, a horizon of intelligibility, how you see and experience the world as this process of understanding what is important to share as a value choice developed by a certain community is also, in a performative way, defining the self of this community. So it's a practice that does not simply define a target, but a subject which did not pre-exist. The fact that at the time that this subject has realized that it is important to share something, and this something has certain conditions in which it is to be shared, this period, this process, this practice, indeed develops the conditions of a we. Okay. This is how I try to enter the discussion on the spatiality of commons, or the spatiality of commoning. And I think the first step is, which will also become the last one perhaps, is to realize that space is not a thing, is not a good. Space is a condition. Space is, to say it in more abstract terms, is a condition of relationality, is a process of relations. I'm talking about space which is meaningful for humans. I'm not talking about the space of geometry, which is a different thing, a different kind of abstraction. I'm talking about space as a condition that becomes meaningful for social relationships, for human relationships. So in this understanding of space, space is a form of relationality. And at the same time, because it is a form of relationality, it does not only support human relations, it is not a container in which human relations can actually happen, but it is essentially, I think, a process, a means through which those human relations can be developed. So this relationality is not simply a background, but it's an active element through which those relations are being shaped. So I'm absolutely against the idea of space as a container, and I'm absolutely against the idea of space as an abstraction. Space is a form that creates, produces, shapes forms of relations. So it might look abstract, but it is actually absolutely part of our everydayness and our everyday forms of life. That is why it is important to understand that there are certain forms of space, certain forms of spatiality, if you may tolerate the term, because space is still connected to the idea of something, an entity out there, whereas spatiality is more near to the idea of conditions of space, qualities of space, therefore this relationality, which is an essential condition of space. So we have to start from understanding what kind of spatialities are around us and what kind of logic these spatialities somehow convey and shape. And to put it briefly, we live in cities which are characterized by the idea of enclaves. Enclaves are spatially defined areas in which borders are essential in this definition. There is a clear-cut definition of inside and outside in urban enclaves. And I'm talking about enclaves of inhabiting, of housing. Ghettos or gated communities are strong cases of urban enclaves of housing. But also we live in urban enclaves of markets, like the malls, or urban enclaves of tourism, like tourist villages, and urban enclaves of culture and consumption of culture, and you can say a lot of things about existing public buildings. So we know that this is a condition of spatiality which has nothing to do with commoning. Exactly, we might describe it as the opposite of commoning. Why this? Because I think the specifying characteristic of commoning or of common space is the fact that it escapes or tends to escape any form of enclosure. And this is, of course, this is something that I say, understanding that I take sides on this. I take sides on the discussion that has to do with commoning. If commoning, to say it in the more general form, and I will return to space, if commoning is a process that happens within the limits of defined spaces, defined communities, and defined identities, then commoning is essentially trapped in an enemy field, if you like. The enemy field is the field of enclosure. If commoning is to survive as a process of commoning, that is, of sharing, it has to be always, it has to be in the tendency of overflowing spatial, community, and identity limits. So this is why I think it is important, both politically and in terms of theory, to distinguish explicitly common space from public space. Because I think public space, in the history that we know so far, has always been space defined by a certain authority, which one way or another encloses it. Why does it enclose it? Because it remains as the guarantor of the use of this kind of space, and as the sole producer of the rules of this use. So public space is necessarily space used by people, and differences between, of course, democratic and autocratic forms of control exist. But what is the common element in all those cases is the fact that public space is used because this use is authorized by a certain authority. Whereas on the other side, I think common space indeed emerges when people are forming ways of defining themselves in the horizon of intelligibility, to remember Esteva, of a we, which does not pre-exist this production, this form of creation, but indeed transforms the very subjects who take this initiative. So common space, indeed, as a relational form of space, indeed happens, does not exist, happens, because people try to understand what is meaningful for them to share and try to develop rules through this process of sharing. To start with some examples, this is an appropriated space in Madrid, which used to be a leftover space, and it was occupied at the beginning and it reached an agreement with the local authorities, and it became an essential focus of activities that were redefining the forms of being together in public, the forms of creating the surrounding, that is, employing ways in which space becomes meaningful, and also the forms through which even the practices and the furniture related to these practices can develop new models of sharing. How did this happen? It did not happen only this way, which is in which we are quite familiar. We know what it means to be around a certain point of interest, to participate in a kind of discussion. But it also means being able to improvise elements through which you can redefine the sharing. And these elements, of course, in terms of architecture, are indeed forms through which we can discuss urban furniture, not as simply a container of people, a form through which people can be in the same side and look at the same, to the same direction, but also devices, tools, through which you can redefine being together. So, the first stop, if you want, in this reasoning, is the fact that common space can indeed happen. Common space can be defined through practices of sharing. And third, the fact of sharing does not simply shape space, but indeed shapes subjects, which in a way redefine forms of relations between themselves. And there we come to a certain understanding of the period that we live in. This is not a period in which well-established welfare societies indeed can, in a way, convince the members of societies that they are there to protect them. We live in a period, and I refer to various studies, if you want. You can just take one for the most prominent one, the work of Saskia Sassen, who talks about expulsion as the main characteristic of today's societies, that is the throwing out of people, out of the society, which essentially in most cases means out of the city. So we live in a period in which societies are not developed around the myth of welfare state, the state which is as a benign father protects his children. We live in a period in which large amounts of people, populations, actually understand that they are dispensable, that they are beyond the safety net of society, that they are beyond the safety net of standard conditions of life, precarious work, precarious education, precarious everyday survival. And this is not, unfortunately, happening only in what we used to call the third world, which actually was not a clear-cut distinction, because we live in cities in which all those worlds coexist. It is happening in what used to be the proud and glorious first world, which is now witnessing the emergence of dispensable populations, populations thrown out, populations on the verge of extinction. And these kind of populations indeed reinvent forms of survival that I think put a renewed interest on the practices of common. Why this? It's a very nice word said by somebody I met in Mexico. We poor can only survive collectively. Individualism is good for the rich. For us, we need to find ways to survive together, otherwise we will perish. How does this happen? I borrow here a term coming from Raúl Zibeki, Uruguayan thinker, who talks about societies in movement rather than movements. And he tries to understand what we sometimes indeed experience in Europe too. Practices, forms of resistance, forms of attempt to survive that do not, in a way, express themselves in very photogenic eruptions of violence or despair, but actually shape the everydayness of people in their way, in the way of rediscovering the importance of commoning in the survival. So I think it is important to follow those forms of everydayness and to see those forms of everydayness as the evidence of societies in movement. This is the term proposed by Zibeki, rather than movements. So societies in movement exist in a condition of delegitimization of existing policies or myths of protection. These societies in movement actually produce, and they produce extremely important and extremely inventive forms of sharing as a means of survival. This is how I can interpret, going back to the examples offered by the previous speaker, this is how I can interpret the squares movement. The squares movement was not the eruption of demands. It was not an oppositional movement against devastating policies of austerity or against autocratic regimes, as is the case of Arab Spring. The Squares movement was essentially a form of rediscovering ways through which to resist collectively and to establish forms of being together as a way of resistance. And these forms of being together indeed secreted, if you would accept the metaphor, secretes, does not voluntarily create, it secretes. It secreted indeed forms of space commoning or common spaces. I really don't know how this works, but I managed so far. So my observations from Syntagma Square Occupation were of this kind. I was part of it, and I'm trying to learn from this experience, as from the experiences that you will see presented in the following images. So what did characterize the process of Syntagma Square Occupation in Athens was indeed the reappropriation of an existing public space, a ceremonial space, a space of utmost importance for the history of the recent history of Greek state. It's in front of the parliament, it's in front of the unknown soldier monument, it's the monumental space par excellence. So in this space, the new form of being together and establishing forms of common space indeed has created this kind of assemblies and this kind of everyday tent cities. And it has created also forms of being together in space, which is not a simple thing. It's not only trying to use space as a platform for demands or for protest, it's using space as a paradigmatic occasion in which bodies rehearse positions, that is, embody relations through space in which new forms of sharing can emerge. So the body part of this experience is indeed important, because it is through this experience that people actually have realized what it means to share space and to understand sharing through space. And of course, similar conditions, you've seen some pictures already, were in Spain, in Tahrir, Cairo, and in Gezi Park in Istanbul, Turkey, and in Hong Kong, the occupation of this area. My next suggestion is the fact that we are witnessing in these processes a new form of speciality, which is the exact opposite, if you want, or is beyond the idea of the enclave. If the enclave is a defined space, a perimeter which defines an inside and an outside, then the threshold as a different kind of space, the threshold is a form of spatiality which is essentially relational, and at the same time, it defines conditions of comparison, of passage, of connection. Not a continuous connection, but a connection that may happen. So threshold is a mediator. So why not think about common space as a kind of shared space that emerges through practices that create a porosity, a shared condition of comparison and passage from one place to another. That is the essentiality of relationality re-established as a form of sharing. So common space is actually a social artifact which is based on the emergence of the threshold conditions. The threshold conditions is a beyond the enclave spatiality, and that's why I tend to think of the city of thresholds as a potential new form of space, a potential new condition in the city in which the sharing of space becomes an active element, and this sharing of space indeed can happen, and we can learn a lot from things that actually make it happen. I just, in a way, have a catalog here of various forms of initiatives that have emerged in Athens during this period of crisis, which each of them was not necessarily and directly connected to an ideology of solidarity, which I respect, obviously. In many cases, this was connected to an everyday approach of everyday problems, and the solutions found, rediscovered, or made effective the fact of solidarity. So you have neighborhood assemblies, you have collective kitchens, self-managed medical centers. You will see some of those pictures soon. So self-managed health clinics. I think it is important to have in mind these kind of experiences as concrete conditions of space. These things indeed are happening. And I strongly believe that even the discussion about urban gardening, which is very popular in Europe, has a different flavor in these conditions. This is not simply an attempt to search for alternative practices. This is also a necessity that creates alternative practices. And of course, practices of occupation. This is an occupied parking lot, which has become a small park in a neighborhood near the center of Athens. All these are practices, indeed, which actually create potential spaces of commoning, common spaces. What is the characteristic of those spaces? These are not spaces in which use is authorized by a certain authority. These are spaces occupied or not. These are spaces developed from below. These are spaces in which no pre-existing subject actually took a decision, but in most cases, there was an initial act that has become something like a catalyst in a condition in which there was this need, in a condition in which this need was recognizable by others. So from the beginning of those initiatives, we have a distinct, a clear difference from initiatives that come from, say, for example, from philanthropy or from institutional state decisions. The difference is that in those initiatives, those who actually started the process were not really those who were offering something to others, but they were also involved in a need that they described as theirs. So it is interesting to observe, for example, the fact that when volunteer doctors and nurses decided to create in certain neighborhoods small medical clinics, self-managed ones, they did not simply execute their roles as professionals. What they did is they showed that it is a new way of understanding health, a new way of understanding conditions of health. And also they realized that offering, by collecting medicine from those who didn't need it, and offering them to those who needed it, they somehow established new ways of understanding what it means to contribute. Those who have understood that indeed returned the medicine again back to the health clinics. And of course, we have interesting experiences when the people were crossing the Aegean as refugees, how they were accepted, how they were becoming part of a process of helping themselves through self-financed proposals. This is quite different from the fact that the state somehow intervened, establishing centers, camps actually. The first days were this kind of stuff, forms of creating common spaces in which people were actually included. My next idea is the fact that in this process, we are not witnessing only a change in the meaning of public space. We are witnessing a change in the meaning of what we used to call the private space, or the space of the family, or the space of the house, which was never like that. The space of house was in many societies not simply the sanctuary of a small group which consider it as private. In many societies, and we know we have many examples from anthropology, house was really a different kind of collective management of a shared space. So house, again, especially in societies in which crisis has destroyed the tissue of collective and mutual help, the house is being redefined through practices of understanding that it is not simply the sanctuary of private, but indeed the potential pool from which new forms of being together emerge. And I will try to show you just a few examples from Latin America in which these populations that I was talking to you about, the populations expelled from the city, thrown out of the city, considered as dispensable, have actually started to create their own spaces. This is an auto-constructed settlement in Brazil in which people actually develop their own places, and they develop the space in which they discover how it is meaningful to create forms of being together. They even redefine what it means its family to have its own house and what it is important to share as a common space, as the space of the neighborhood. And if this is an example from Brazil, also an example from Argentina, where activists actually become catalysts in the creation of new forms of meeting areas which are communal but are not exclusive. They are indeed inclusive, because in the favelas in Argentina, in Buenos Aires is a specific one, you have also the problem of being able to become part of a collectivity and not simply satisfying your own needs in the conditions of precarity. And of course this ends up with collective meals, which is another form of establishing common space. And my last examples are two important examples, both in terms of politically and architecturally new ideas about common space, which is two autonomous neighborhoods in Mexico City, around the periphery of Mexico City. As you can see in the slogan they use, they construct popular power. What does it mean to construct? Construyendo poder popular. What does it mean? It means that through space, through initiatives that start from the occupation of land and the creation of alternative neighborhoods, you do not actually satisfy needs, but you go one step further, and this is my final suggestion. You go one step further, and this further step is realizing that the fact of sharing space and the fact of this devising rules of how to share space is already a process of going beyond existing society. Is already a process of establishing in a very precarious, contradictory, whatever, but indeed real way, establishing a beyond. And this kind of beyond, of course, has interesting results. It's a neighborhood designed by people themselves. even the square is called Plaza de los Filósofos, eh? The square of the philosophers. And also, they have their own purification system of water and their own radio. And what they try to do is actually, as the next one, which is the Tlanesi Gallis, another neighborhood in the same area, what they try to do is to define forms through which solving the problem of living together in cities is indicative of a new possibility. And of course, this is not an uncontested terrain. They are always surrounded by aggressive paramilitary and statist militants who actually think of it, not by chance, as a very dangerous experiment because it creates new forms of social organization. And this is indeed my last point. This is, you can see the layout of this area. Observe the names of the streets, okay? They are declarations of values. So, is this a process? Oh, sorry, I'm always one step behind. And this is a kind of houses they have built. Also observe the way that the sharing of common entrances indeed establishes micro spatialities of encounter. So these people are really and very inventive in constructing this kind of thresholds, this kind of shared spaces which are not simply spaces of a different collectivity, but are indeed spaces which are generators of new social relations. That is why I think that we can talk, to sum up, on various levels on the idea of a threshold commons. If commons is to survive, it has to at least establish three distinct areas of thresholding, if you want. It's a vulgar way of using the word, but it shows something, that threshold is a becoming, is not a state. The first area of thresholding is the area of space. We need threshold space in order to experience this being in common in space. We need threshold rules, that is, rules being shaped in the process. Newcomers need to be part of this process. They need to become active members in the shaping of rules. We are not talking about new communities which are secluded and defined by a perimeter. We're not talking about homogeneous communities. We're talking communities open to differentiation, to otherness. But this otherness is not simply a toleration, is an experience which actually makes those people co-producers of a new reality. And last but not least, of course, we're talking about the idea of commons as the idea of creating in-between areas, not simply in terms of space, but also in terms of redefinition. No? Commons are not there to be defined once and for all. They are to be defined by people in the process of participating. And this is why my final suggestion is that indeed, in the times that we live, things happen. Things indeed produce alternative realities. Things indeed produce new experiences for people. And that is why they are not simply prefigurations of a possible future, which is absolutely necessary. It is absolutely necessary to see that in these processes, a new world is possible, but they are also indeed active experiences that shape the everydayness of people. And I think this connection between the prefigurative element of commoning and the actual results of commoning is what makes it a powerful potentiality of overcoming everyday disastrous realities that are being connected with capitalism. Thank you very much.